It's time for the Matt best Herder coverage of the top stories in
SI
sports.
Does a great job
the
on
Sports
the NFL.
Wrap with Jason Page starts now.
Yes, it does. Thank you, Chad Erickson, for that introduction. Good to have you all with us on this Monday edition of the program. Chris Mannix. It's an SI Monday. Chris Mannix stops by the show in about 20 minutes from the West Coast, where he's checking in on the Lakers. We'll get some thoughts with him on all things NBA playoffs. And Sam Yarnell will join us a little later on, something to consider, odds and ends as well. But we start things out in the NFL. Our good friend Matt Verderam, kind enough to help us out on this Monday to break down the NFL draft. He, of course, with SI, does a great job on the NFL. Also the host of the Matt Verderam Show podcast, available all on Patreon. All right, Matt. Winners, losers, grades. Give me your biggest winner coming away now that we're about 48 hours removed from the NFL draft.
Well, I think the Steelers had the best class. So if you want to call them the biggest winner, that's fine. I think they added three capable offensive linemen. They added Roman Wilson. They added Peyton Wilson. I think they did a hell of a job. I think the biggest winner, though, overall has got to be the Bears. And sometimes it's easy. They added the best player, and they added the best quarterback, and they added Roma Dunze, who I think is probably the second best receiver in this class. Don't love that they took a punter. Could have done without that pick. But listen, I think, like, if you're asking me which team changed its trajectory the most in that draft, it's the Chicago Bears. I don't know how that's even really arguable.
They didn't overthink it, though. I mean, maybe with a punter, you could say that. But in general, so many times teams in this situation will overthink this. Smartest guy in the room sort of syndrome. And it just feels like they didn't overthink it to me. I kind of feel the same way you do.
Yeah, I mean, you know, look, I think the teams that get themselves in the most trouble are these teams that try to get cute and they try to outthink themselves, like the Falcons. And they end up in a spot where you look at the clash and like, what the hell is that? What are you doing? Why? I mean, sometimes it's just that simple. And like, I think, you know, we see the same teams each year have good classes because they know who they are. You know, the Ravens, Pittsburgh, Philadelphia, Kansas City. They know who they are. They know exactly who they're looking for. They know how they want to go about their business, and they do it. And you know, those teams, I thought all, by the way, had good drafts again. But I thought Chicago, look, it's just simple. You take Caleb Williams at one, and if you stay at nine and Dunze's there, you take a Dunze. And he was, and they did.
Relative to their positions within being able to win a championship or improve themselves to be able to win a championship, I love the draft the Eagles had. How did you feel about Philadelphia?
Yeah. I mean, I thought,
you know, Quinyon Mitchell, you know,
right. You land two corners, and he and Dejean, I'll never pronounce that right as long
that's
as I
right.
live.
He'll forgive you.
Yeah. I don't really care if he does. you know, look, my last name is Verderam. All right. Believe me, nobody said their last name butchered more than me. No, I think if you're Philadelphia, it's an example again of like, they were smart. They didn't get cute. They didn't panic. They stayed right at 22, and they ended up taking the first corner off the board. And then in the second round, they go up and get another corner that a lot of people thought would be off the board in the first round. You know, they get Jalix Hunt, who is a good edge rusher, an interesting kid, smaller school. But a kid that, you know, some people thought might be late second, they got in the third. So I think, again, it's another year where you look at the Eagles and you look at Howie Roseman and say they had a plan. They followed that plan and they walked away with very possibly two starting corners from day one.
What are the Cowboys doing? can you tell me? Because I've had a number of people reach out to me over the weekend and basically say, WTF, what are the Cowboys doing?
I mean, I like the Guyton and the BB picks, but outside of that, like, I don't know what the plan is to win this year. Like, you can't sit there.
Exactly.
You can't sit there if you're Jerry Jones, even though he's going to do this. and blame Dak and McCarthy when this thing goes to hell in a handbasket this season. Like, and I don't think they're going to be awful or anything. Like, they probably make playoffs, but like, they're when they don't advance deep enough in the playoffs, and Jerry has his, you know, mea culpa at the end of the year, and holds court with the reporters and says, well, you know, we got to evaluate it. Well, Jerry, I mean, buddy, you're the one who didn't extend Prescott and then stripped away half of his weaponry in town around him and did nothing. I mean, nothing in free agency. Your only signing was Eric Kendricks, who is washed up and has been for years at this point. And then you have a draft where, look, okay, the offensive line got better. That's fine. That's an important thing, sure. But, like, you didn't add any significant, like, weaponry around the guy. You didn't add any serious help. Now they brought back Ezekiel Elliott. Ezekiel Elliott's, like, 57 years old. I mean, what is the – you look at it and just – I really think with Jerry, the problem with the Cowboys has been the same problem for 30 years. It's about Jerry. Everything's about Jerry. He's got a radio spot he does every week, and he's always holding court after games. And he's always, you know, listen, no draft room is more coordinated for television than the Cowboys, where, you know, he's getting middle chair. Like, you know, like every other draft room, nobody's worried about where they're positioned for the camera. Where is Jerry Jones every time they show the Dallas Cowboys war room? Where he's right smack dab, not coach. Coach is on the side. Jerry's in the middle. Like, it is all about Jerry. And since Jimmy Johnson left, they've done nothing. And now we're going on three decades.
Is he, I mean, I've heard some people suggest that it's almost as if he's trying to get it to a point. And I only got about 30 seconds left in this segment, but it feels like he's almost trying to get this to a point where it's bad enough that he can make Dak and McCarthy the fall guys and sort of make some changes there. Am I right?
I mean, I think he's trying to put all the pressure on Dak. I don't think it's totally wrong. But my whole thing is, like, why? Then just get rid of him. Then just trade him. If that's how you feel, then just, I mean, you're so, like, what is the end game with this? They're not going to win a Super Bowl. And that can't be franchise tagged next year, according to his contract. So, like, what is the end game? The end game is he's gone. Like, you're not, if you extend him off this whole thing's even dumber than it looks right now. Like, there's, I mean, it's the whole, everything that is going on in Dallas makes no sense and seemingly has an end game of oblivion.
Matt Verderam's hanging out with us. I want to hold him for one more segment. I'm going to ask him about what's going on with the Falcons, their decision to draft Michael Penix, all of that and more as we continue at Sports Wrap.
Over 13 million Americans were affected by identity theft in 2022, and the threats go way beyond just credit card fraud. Today's identity thieves can use your information in ways that are easy to miss by just monitoring accounts and credit, like opening loans, transferring home titles, even committing crimes.
Someone got my Social Security number, made a driver's license, and was used for criminal activity.
You can do so much with a Social Security number that I didn't know could happen. They drained my bank account. It was terrifying.
You're even more vulnerable than you realize. Your information is exposed through online shopping, banking, even corporate data breaches. No wonder there's a new victim of identity theft every 3 seconds. Only LifeLock alerts you to the widest volume of threats all in one place. Like someone trying to use your Social Security number, open a new loan in your name, or even commit a crime in your name.
There was a big yes button and there was a big no button. I clicked, that's not me, and LifeLock took it from there.
If you become a victim of identity theft, a dedicated U.S.-based restoration specialist will be assigned to your case and work to fix the issue on your behalf.
If something happens, you have somebody fighting for you.
All LifeLock members are backed by the LifeLock $1 Million Protection Package, including reimbursement for stolen funds, personal expenses, and coverage for lawyers and experts up to $1 million. It can be dangerously easy to steal your identity. With LifeLock, it's easy to help protect yourself.
I will be with LifeLock forever.
Join the millions of people already protected by LifeLock. And for a limited time, save 25% on your first year with promo code 25TV. All plans include a 60-day money-back guarantee. Call 800-710-7531 or visit LifeLock.com/25TV to save 25% on your first year of identity theft protection. Enroll now.
Attention families with a loved one in a nursing home. If your loved one has suffered from bed sores, falls, broken bones, dehydration, or even death, you may be entitled to a substantial settlement. If you have a loved one who was injured in a nursing home, we will find out what happened. State violations are found against nursing homes every day. You have a limited time to file your claim, so don't wait. Call 800-398-5999 and speak with one of our attorneys. The call is confidential and free.
Welcome back to Sports Wrap. Good to have you with us on this Monday. We have bolted him to the chair so he can't leave. Matt Verderam hanging out with us. SI does a great job on the NFL. Also, the Matt Verderam Show podcast. You can get over on Patreon. Go and subscribe today. All right, try to make some sense. Again, having a couple of days to marinate in it. Give me some sense as to what the Falcons are thinking here and sort of the machinations behind this decision to go and draft Michael Penix Jr. despite obviously going and giving all this money to Kirk Cousins in the offseason. There's going to be some hurt feelings. There's going to be some ruffled feathers. Try and make some sense of it for me. You've had a couple of days.
Yeah, a couple days. There are going to be people studying that for 50 years. I don't know. I mean, my first inclination was they just fell in love with this kid during the draft process and felt like they had to have him.
It's mine, man.
But here's the problem with that. Then why the hell did you sign Kirk Cousins for 4 years and $180 million? The hell are you doing? Like, if you love Michael Penix that much, then maybe you shouldn't have signed Kirk Cousins. I mean, none of it makes any sense.
But is it possible that one came before the other? That, again, season immediately ends, guys become available, you have to make a decision, and you're afraid of getting shut out in the game of musical chairs, and then maybe you don't get... Maybe they fall in love with Penix after they go and get into this marriage with Kirk Cousins. That's kind of what it feels like. That's what it feels like to me.
They've been watching Michael Penix in college for 6 years. And if you want to just go off of this season, fine. They saw him this season. They saw him at the Senior Bowl. They saw him at the Combine. And then they signed Kirk Cousins. Like, and then they came out of that going, well, wait a minute. I don't know. Maybe also Michael Penix Jr. Michael Penix Jr. is 24 years old. And I like Penix. I think he's a good player. He's 24 years old. Kirk Cousins is uncuttable for the next 2 years. In the third year, you're still eating a huge dead cap hit. One of the biggest reasons teams draft quarterbacks is what? Because they're cheap for 4 or 5 years. And you can build a big team around them and a really good team around and take advantage of it, like Houston's doing right now with C.J. Stroud. Guess what? You're not doing that with Michael Penix Jr. because Michael Penix Jr. is behind a guy making $45 million a year. And even if you cut him after 2 seasons, he's still, Cousins that is really expensive for 3 years. So that's one problem. The other problem, if you're the coaching staff, if you're the players, how the hell do you go into the season and go, okay, listen, we are fully behind Kirk. It's not like it's a situation. Like, I saw somebody compare it to the Smith-Mahomes thing, and that was one of the dumbest comparisons I've seen. Alex Smith had 1 year left in Kansas City when they got Mahomes. He was going out the door. They were going to trade him. Everybody in the world, including Alex Smith, understood that. They just signed Kirk Cousins. Like, he's there for years. So, like, what happens if let's say Cousins sprains his ankle and he's out for 4 weeks, a high ankle sprain, and Penix comes in and plays really well. What the hell do you do if you're Atlanta? What do you do? What if Penix lights the world on fire in camp in the preseason? You're going to sit Cousins? I mean, it's so dumb. It's impossible to rationalize. I don't care what anybody says about it. It was a dumb selection, unless this kid turns out to be a Hall of Famer. Good luck.
What'd you think? Because you do a Chiefs podcast. I want to get your thoughts. How did you feel the Chiefs fared in this draft? Just start right at the top. What'd you think of Xavier Worthy?
He makes a lot of sense for them. I think that Xavier Worthy is the kind of player that I would have based the draft grade on him, on who took him. because if you're a team that doesn't have a ton of imagination on offense and you just want to run a straight line 50 times a game, I would have been concerned. I feel like Andy Reid is probably the perfect guy to coach Xavier Worthy. The same way I thought Andy Reid was a perfect guy to coach Tyreek Hill early in his career, where you have a guy who's like, okay, he runs really fast, like runs some pretty good routes. What do you do with him? I think a lot of people have this tendency, even in the NFL at the highest level, well, he's really fast. We're going to run go routes. Whereas, like, if you actually can put him in motion and create some mismatches and utilize him in space and create space for other players, that's when I think he becomes really dangerous. So I thought Worthy was a really good pick. I will tell you, my biggest shock of that draft, other than Penix, was Buffalo trading with Kansas City in the first round. I could not believe Buffalo did that. Stunned. I give the Chiefs a B-plus for the draft class. I think Sua Mataia is a good left tackle. He's got a shot to start day one. I love the Hicks pick, Jaden Hicks in the fourth round. I thought they did well. I thought they had a really good class.
How about you mentioned Buffalo, and I was going to ask you, you kind of beat me to it. Biggest surprise outside of Penix, and you're going Buffalo?
That trade was staggering to me. Like, you're helping Kansas City get a guy who runs a 4.240. You've been eliminated by them three of the last 4 years in the playoffs, and you actively help them get this kid. Now, if Worthy ends up being a bust, this trade, you know, goes in the dustbin. Nobody cares. If Xavier Worthy is torching the hell out of Buffalo in a playoff game this year, that is going to be brought up 25 times on the broadcast. Like, hey, you know that he actually was taken with Buffalo's original pick. I mean, this is for those of you who don't remember or aren't aware of this. The Chiefs took Patrick Mahomes with Buffalo's original draft pick. Like, they then jumped the Bills years ago to get Trent McDuffie when the Bills wanted Trent McDuffie, and they sat and stood there and waited. The Chiefs jumped them, got Trent McDuffie, and the Bills went with their second pick of Kyer Elam. Like, the Chiefs have tortured the Bills with this kind of stuff in the past years in the draft. And you're the Bills, and you gave Kansas City the ability to draft Xavier Worthy. You better hope he's a bust, because if he's not, that's a train wreck.
I've got about 30 seconds here. Surprised the Giants didn't go with a quarterback and instead went receiver to help Daniel Jones. Is that showing a commitment to him in your mind?
I was slightly surprised. I thought that, you know what, they could have gone with McCarthy and I wouldn't have killed him. At the same point, I can't blame them for taking a kid like Neighbors, who I think everybody felt was a top 10 pick. But I was a little surprised. I think the Giants know that Daniel Jones isn't the answer.
He's going to be this year, whether it's the right answer, whether it's the right answer or not. Matt Verderam, host of the Matt Verderam Show podcast. You can go and get that over at Patreon. Go and subscribe today. Also, SI does a terrific job there. Matt, appreciate you breaking down the draft with us. We'll do it again soon, my friend.
Sounds good, ain't
it? Matt Verderam hanging out with us on the show. All right, Chris Mannix is right around the corner. We'll get his thoughts on the NBA playoffs and a whole bunch more as we continue on this Monday edition of Sports Wrap. Sports Wrap continues. Good to have you with us on this Monday edition of the show. Let's talk some NBA. We got the NFL draft out of the way. Now we'll talk some hoops. Chris Mannix does a great job. Senior writer over at SI, does a great job on the NBA, boxing. He's with DAZN, NBC Boston. We could spend a whole segment just running off your credentials here, so I'm not going to do that. All right, let's run through. We'll go Western Conference this segment. We'll do the East and the next. Talk about the West, obviously, with the Lakers and Nuggets. Start there with this, you know, the Lakers down 3-1 in this series. You give them any shot to get this to a game six, or was game four an aberration?
Yeah, not really. History has shown over the last couple of years that for a number of reasons, the Nuggets have the Lakers number. And I give LA a lot of credit for digging deep and winning that game four. I mean, that takes a lot of heart to win a game four, knowing you're going back to Denver in a series that is virtually impossible to win. But I just don't see it. I said coming into this series that the biggest key was going to be consistent play from D'Angelo Russell, and they haven't had it. You know, the Nuggets played Russell off the floor in the series last year. And, you know, aside from, you know, one half of a game in game two and some decent play in game four, he just hasn't been the factor that he's needed to be. So, look, if he has revival and looks more like the player we saw in the regular season where he's shooting plus 40% from three and, you know, low turnovers, high assist, then, yeah, you can see them clawing their way back into it. But, you know, in a number of games, you know, 8-9 games against the Nuggets recently, he just has not been the factor that need him to be.
Let's assume this ends in five. Even if it ends in six, what does the offseason look like for this team? We've heard talk, you know, that Darvin Ham won't be retained. Where do the Lakers go from here? If the idea is we have to find a way to be better than the Nuggets, for years it was, all right, how do we build a roster, not just in LA, but in other organizations? It was building a roster that could beat the Warriors, figuring that out. Now it's build a roster that can beat the Nuggets. If you're the Lakers, how do you do that?
Yeah, I think, as always, with a disappointing season, there'll be a long look taken at Darvin Ham. I do think there's a danger in just, you know, firing as many coaches as the Lakers have over the last couple of years. I mean, letting Frank Vogel go after, you know, he won the championship in 2020, you know, bringing Darvin Ham in and potentially letting him go after just a couple of years, including a year removed from a trip to the conference finals. I think there's real risk to that, but they'll take a look at it, I'm sure. I actually think the Lakers have a chance to beef up their roster this offseason and keep that window open for at least one more year. Their cache of assets increases significantly once they hit the offseason. They'll be able to deal as many as three first-round picks. They've got some movable contracts in D'Angelo Russell and Rui Hachimura, among others. You know, presumably Jared Vanderbilt will be back next year. So, you know, they can go out and make a pretty hard play for some of the available stars. And I'm mostly looking at Atlanta with Trae Young and with DeJounte Murray. I think both those guys will be priorities for the Lakers this offseason. If they can land one of them, you know, all of a sudden you've got a core of LeBron, AD, and either Young or Murray. Yeah, that's at least a pretty competitive team right there. Is it enough to beat the Nuggets? I'm not sure if anything's enough to beat the Nuggets in either conference, but I don't think this season is the end of the LeBron AD era in LA.
Chris, I make you the grand poobah in Phoenix. How are you fixing the Suns?
I just don't think there's a way to fix it. And I know there's been a lot of attention paid to, you know, Frank Vogel's job security and would a coaching change help there. You know, to me, the failure of this team, you know, begins with ownership. I mean, Matt Ishbia, I think, is a good owner. I think he's good for the NBA. His enthusiasm, his willingness to spend, all these things are positives. But the facts are the facts. I mean, he came in and, you know, pushed the Suns to overpay for Kevin Durant, you know, giving up, you know, Bridges, multiple first-round picks, the assets that they had to give to get KD. And then when they didn't really have to add another star, they went out and traded for Bradley Beal and gave up the rest of their assets. And they just didn't build a team that was positioned to be successful in, you know, the 2024 version of the NBA. They built a team of kind of mid-range jump shooters who, you know, in the case of Bradley Beal, had never been a third star before on a team. So I think this team, the roster is deeply flawed. I mean, the answers are pretty obvious. They need a point guard. That's pretty clear. They need rim protection. That's pretty clear. But they have no ability to get it, you know, outside of, you know, small exceptions that they can use to upgrade their roster. And, you know, look, they've got free agents of their own. Royce O'Neal is going to be a free agent. He's going to have a market. You know, they've got like three or four other guys that are going to hit the market. This team is probably going to have, you know, a 4 or 5 player roster turnover again next season. And that's just not conducive to success.
What's amazing is basketball. Casual basketball fans could see this train wreck in terms of building a roster around these three last off season. And the fact that basketball novices and general fans could see this coming and that the Suns as an organization could not is very troubling to me. Mavericks and Clippers, we all knew it was going to be an entertaining series. And even without Kawhi, give credit to the Clippers and James Harden. What do you see over a best of three here with this thing tied at two?
I mean, going back home with the series even is a massive win for the Clippers. I would have put any amount of money on the Mavericks winning that game four. You know, Kawhi down. And, you know, if you read between the lines with what Lawrence Frank said yesterday, you don't know when he's going to be back. I mean, it seems almost pie in the sky to believe he's going to be back this series at least. That said, I still think the Mavericks are in a good position because I think the Mavericks are the better team with Kawhi out or as a shell of himself. I mean, Paul George and James Harden digging deep in that fourth quarter was as impressive a performance from guys that, you know, particularly in the case of Harden, who have had plenty of critics about his postseason play, but they made shot after shot and they fended off that Dallas comeback down the stretch. But you know, Kyrie and Luka are playing great. You know, PJ Washington has been solid for that team. They're getting what they need from their interior defenders. They've won in LA already, you know, during this series. I give a slight edge to Dallas, but, you know, one way or the other, I do think this series is going to go seven.
Let's focus on the East for a segment. We'll do that on the other side with Chris Mannix. Does a great job with SI. Sports Wrap continues.
Attention families with a loved one in a nursing home. If your loved one has suffered from bed sores, falls, broken bones, dehydration, or even death, you may be entitled to a substantial settlement. If you have a loved one who was injured in a nursing home, we will find out what happened. State violations are found against nursing homes every day. You have a limited time to file your claim, so don't wait. Call 800-398-5999 and speak with one of our attorneys. The call is confidential and free.
Rolling along on this Monday edition of the show, something to consider in 10 minutes. There's finally some tarnish on Aaron Judge. We will explain. Go around baseball a little bit. Chris Mannix hanging out with us, does a great job. SI, senior writer there, basketball, boxing, DAZN. NBC Sports Boston, you name it. Chris is doing it. All right, let's talk about the East here, obviously with the Knicks and the 76ers and what has been a very entertaining series. But the Knicks are the 3-1 lead. I picked the Knicks in five before the series started. I thought every game was going to be competitive and tight, and it has been. And Jalen Brunson started this series off slow. He is certainly not slow now.
No, and this is just a continuation of the superstar turn that Jalen Brunson has made this year. I mean, he was my most improved player choice of the year, which kind of flies in the face of the way I've voted for it in the past. I've usually voted for a guy like a Kobe White who, you know, kind of came out of nowhere and had an impressive season. But you can argue that Jalen Brunson this year kind of came out of nowhere. I mean, he was a good player last year for the Knicks, but he wasn't an all-star. He was an all-star this year and finished and will finish, I think, in the top five in the MVP balloting. And what you're seeing this postseason, you know, answers the question of can Jalen Brunson be the best player on a team that wins a playoff series? Now, they still got one more to go, but right now, the way Jalen has played, carrying this team through stretches offensively, carrying this team, you know, through injuries. Julius Randle hasn't played months. You saw Mitchell Robinson go out again for the most recent game. I think this is really a testament to just how good Jalen Brunson is. And look, I don't think he can count Philadelphia out just yet because the competitiveness of these games has been there. I mean, the Sixers can look at the series and say, look, if the referees got it right in game two, we might be going back to New York at a split. If we didn't choke in the fourth quarter of that game four, we might be up going back to New York. So I think there still can be some confidence inside the walls of that Sixers locker room that they can win. But what Jalen Brunson has done has been really remarkable to watch.
It really feels like the Knicks are built well for this version of the postseason where it almost seems like there's a complete flip in the way games are being officiated. And it feels like this Knicks team and the build and the roster composition and the head coach, it all feels like it's built for this. Am I wrong?
No, I think they're built to play this brand of basketball. Premium on possessions, defensive versatility matters. I mean, OG Anunoby had a phenomenal fourth quarter against the Sixers defending Joel Embiid. We saw Isaiah Hartenstein get five fouls in the third quarter, become a non-factor in the fourth. And yeah, I mean, OG stepped up and defended Joel Embiid as well as you possibly could during that stretch. I mean, that's kind of what the Knicks do. They're aggressive. They're again, versatile defensively. It's definitely a team that's built to succeed, you know, in this brand of postseason basketball. What concerns me about the Knicks mostly going forward, and look, it maybe won't manifest itself until a conference finals matchup, because it's looking right now like Indiana, you know, could be that next matchup for New York. But when you are solely dependent on one player to carry the burden offensively, good defensive teams will take advantage of that. And a team like Boston, for example, which has loads of wing defenders, whether it's Holiday, Derek White, among others, Jaylen Brown, of course, on the wing, and are a very smart defensive team, they'll be able to take advantage of that. So I still have my concerns about the ceiling of this Knicks team, but for right now, you know, this first round series is playing out exactly as Tom Thibodeau would have scripted.
The Celtics are going to beat the Heat, so I'm going to move away from that. But how about a thought here on this Bucks-Pacers series? Obviously, with Lillard now hurt alongside Giannis, if this thing ends the way I think we think it's going to, and that is the Pacers winning this series, if it goes that way, do you sort of just reset and start over again with a fresh season for Doc, get some of the pieces he may want in here alongside these guys? Or do you see a scenario where there are still much bigger changes to be made with this Milwaukee team?
I think we could see changes. I do think there is merit to the argument of, hey, let's just go into training camp healthy with our coach, who will add his own members of the staff and, you know, be able to implement a system from day one that they can stick with, because there were some very good moments for the Bucks in the aftermath of Doc Rivers taking over. Their defense improved measurably early on, slipped a little bit towards the end, but they seemed to gravitate towards the kind of defense that Doc was preaching. You know, a couple of things that they're going to have to address. One, if they do bring the band back, they've got to address perimeter defense. They just don't have a wing stopper out there. And I'm not sure what their path to getting one really is, because they don't have a lot of assets either. But they need someone to, you know, match up with the Pascal Siakams of the NBA and guys like that that have really given them trouble throughout the season and are obviously giving them trouble in the playoffs. And then I would be for bringing back Damian Lillard and giving him another year, a consistent year with Giannis and with Doc Rivers. But I'm sure Miami's probably going to be banging on Milwaukee's door, just like they were banging on Portland's door, to see if there's a Lillard trade that can be made there. So I think the most likely scenario is that you do see the band brought back, but you know, if there's some internal discussion that says, look, it just wasn't working the way we wanted it to work, you know, maybe we could see a substantive change within that locker room.
The music means I got to go, but I got 15 seconds. We didn't even get into Cavaliers and Magic. Who winds up winning that series tied at 2 right now?
Whichever's team offense figures it out on the road. We'll go with that, because the offenses are bad, both teams on the road.
That's why he's a pro. Chris Mannix does a great job. SI on the NBA, boxing, DAZN, NBC Sports Boston. Chris, I appreciate it. Be well, my friend.
You got it.
We're coming back.
Do you use Viagra or Cialis? Have you been thinking about trying Viagra or Cialis? What if we can promise you the same results for less than $3 a pill? If you're paying $20 or more a pill for Viagra, you're getting taken to the cleaners. Our pill delivers the exact same results for less than $3. We'll do the math for you. You'll save more than $16 a pill for the same results. Want more? We'll give you 40 blue pills or 40 yellow pills for $99 and add 4 more pills free. You save more than $500. Stop overpaying for expensive prescriptions. You don't have to be a rocket scientist to know what to do next. You need to call now and get your 44 pills for just $99. Stop overpaying for Viagra. Call us anytime, day or night, and start saving big money for the exact same results. Have your credit card ready. Ordering is fast and easy with your pills delivered to your door in a non-marked package. Call now.
Odds and Ends coming up in 10 minutes. Saying goodbye to a WNBA legend. Frankly, a basketball legend. There's no reason to even qualify it with men's or women's. We'll talk about jersey changes for Major League Baseball, what has been a disaster for MLB, and a whole bunch more. But first, something to consider. And Sam Yarnell is here, ladies and gentlemen, wearing his curly W today. Showing that Nats pride. Somebody has to. Let's talk a bit about Aaron Judge. And the shine has finally come off the Yankee captain. He was that clean Yankee figure, face of the organization, till he decided to put his hand up. And he wasn't trying to ask a question in class. No, no, Sam Yarnell. Aaron Judge cheated. He cheated the game of baseball. And it led to a huge Yankee inning, and they beat the Brewers. There we go. Let's go, Aaron Judge. You see it on your screen. Judge put his hand up, sliding into second base. And what would have been a double play that got the Brewers out of an inning. Instead, the inning continued. The Yankees would score 7 runs in that inning. A 4-4 game became an 11-4 game. Yankees win. Yankees win. After the game, Major League Baseball said, "Our bad." That Judge should have been called for interference on the play. The problem is, it's not reviewable. So again, even in this day and age where we have replay and things that could get the call right, yet another sport where you can't get it right.
Jason, you have put me in the impossible position, and viewers of the show will know how impossible of a position you've put me in here. I have to choose right now whether I want to defend the Yankees or the Major League Baseball umpires. My gosh, can I pick the neither? At the end of the day, I think Major League Baseball's wrong. This is a weird situation. When I first saw it, it was like, oh, that was Bush League. Why is he doing that? But then I realized that was the Yankees hater in me coming out to play. The reality of the situation is this. When you're sliding, and former players out there watching this will understand, when you're sliding, your hands naturally go up because the momentum of your body is going down towards the ground and your hands are the lightest part of that body. That's all Aaron Judge was doing. His hands were going up in a natural motion. The only time you have the right to call obstruction or interference is if the player goes out of their way to hinder the play on the ball. Aaron Judge very clearly, in my mind, did not do that. I think Major League Baseball should have kept their mouth shut for a myriad of reasons. One, because of what I just said, but two, because of what you just said, because now they're in the spotlight and everyone thinks no one knows how to do their own job. It was a very interesting circumstance, Jason, but I think that it is a good sign for Aaron Judge. The ball's finally starting to bounce this way, which I think we're clearly going to need for him if he wants to have any sort of the season we were expecting him to have before the season kicked off.
Starting to hit the long ball. Giancarlo Stanton hit one this weekend. Anthony Rizzo had a couple of bombs for the Yankees, who win a series in Milwaukee against, I don't know if they're still in first place, but the Brewers, one of the top teams, obviously, in the NL Central. The Marlins are a really bad baseball team. They were up 7 yesterday on the Nationals, and then the Nats scored 10 unanswered over the course of a couple of innings and route to a win. It's the curse of Kim Ng. I'm going to tell you, it's the curse of Kim Ng.
As much as I would love to spend the remaining 3 minutes of this segment talking about how great the Nationals
Please
are,
don't.
I'm very scared for the Miami Marlins. Seriously, we're getting to a point where they're Oakland Athletics, Chicago White Sox bat, and it seems like Peter Bendix, I saw an interview with him and Craig Mish yesterday. It seems like Peter Bendix is kind of has these blinders on, doesn't see the reality of the situation. Baseball is in serious trouble in South Florida between Miami and the ongoing situation with the Rays, which hasn't been solved in 7 years now. We have a serious baseball problem in South Florida. Rob Manfred better do something to step in and incentivize these teams to start winning, because if the Rays and the Marlins finish out the season that the way they've started it, we're going to have to seriously think about moving both of those franchises out of where they are now.
Oh, they'll never move the Marlins. They won't get, it'll be a long time before they give up on Miami. Tampa's a different story. They're not going to give up on Miami. They won't give up on that.
Jason, if they have their second... If they have their second fire sale the season after making the playoffs, last time they did it, they won the World Series. They're doing that for the second time in 25 years. That is not acceptable in Major League Baseball.
It may not be acceptable to you. It may not be acceptable to you, but baseball has shown time and time again that they're not going to just step in and give up on a franchise in a brand new stadium. It's just not going to happen. They're not going to do it. Give me a thought on the overseas games, because we had the Rockies and Astros playing in Mexico City. You got 1 minute. Go.
Yeah, I think that these overseas games have got to go, or we just have to rethink them. As much as we want to say that it's fun to have these players travel overseas throughout the course of the Major League Baseball season, one, it's not realistic to have these players go on flights almost twice as long as they're used to with a cross-country flight. And that time you're talking about the trips to London and England for the London games. Second of all, you have this stadium in Mexico City, twice the elevation of Coors Field. You're going to have pitchers get injured more. You're going to have the stats for hitters be completely skewed the wrong way. I just don't think it's good for the game the way they're doing it right now. If they do seriously want to do it, let's move these games to somewhere where baseball is more prevalent in the Latin American community. Let's play them in the Dominican Republic or Cuba or Honduras, or Venezuela. Let's do something like that rather than how they've been doing it. It's got to go.
Odds and Ends is next. The end of an era in basketball. We'll get to it. All right, time to put the wraps on this baby. Before we do, don't forget, check out the vodcast version of the show. Maybe our television show isn't on in your area every day. Maybe you only get the weekend show. Maybe you only get the weekday show. Get it all. The Sports Wrap with Jason Page podcast, vodcast, available wherever you get your podcasts. Go and check it out and subscribe. All right, time for some odds and ends. Odds and ends, Sam Yarnell. The end of an era in basketball. Candace Parker, surefire Hall of Famer, decorated college basketball star. By the way, first female to dunk in a college basketball game. That Candace Parker, world champion Candace Parker, two-time Olympic gold medalist Candace Parker. She is hanging it up after, I believe, 16 seasons in the W. I want to make sure I'm right about that, but I think it was 16 seasons. She's got some foot problems that have been plaguing her, but still an amazing career and an amazing run for Candace Parker.
Yeah, 16 seasons, Jason. I mean, the accolades are uncountable with Candace Parker. Seven-time All-Star, three-time champion, All-Star MVP, two-time MVP for the league, played 410 games, and she shot 50 and 33% from the field and from behind the arc as a center. It's absolutely incredible the numbers that Candace Parker put up over the course of her career with three different teams. Let's not forget she had continued success between franchises, which we've seen as something very hard to do. See Elena Deladon as an example. Candace Parker was awesome. It was a treat to get to watch her for 16 seasons and wish her all the best in retirement. Yeah. 16 points a game over 410 games, Jason.
And she's a terrific analyst with Turner Sports as well. Hope to get her on the show one of these days. The Rangers dispatch the Capitals in four games, doing what you're supposed to do when you are a team that has been as successful as the Rangers have been this year, going in, dusting the Capitals, on to the next round.
I wanted to bet a parlay before this series started that the books just, they must have seen me coming from a mile away and they blocked me from betting it. It was the Rangers to sweep and Tom Wilson to score a goal in the series. Both of them, oh, I know, horrible, ugly. Both of them hit. It would have been amazing cash. The books are scared of me at this point. The Caps are lost. They've wasted yet another season of the best goal scorer in history's career. I went on a rant about this team about a month and a half ago on the show. I don't know what the Washington Capitals are doing. Maybe one of the biggest letdown franchises over the course of the last 20 years.
I would agree. Did Ovechkin wind up scoring at all yesterday? So he went like three or four games. He went all four games in this series without scoring, didn't he?
Big old goose egg.
Yeah, that's unfortunate.
And I think that just really quick, I think that speaks to Spencer Carberry and them bringing in this new coach and being so fond of him behind the bench. Yeah, well, he kind of proved to you in these last four games, he's a regular season coach who simply cannot get it done in the playoffs, even when he has oodles of talent down that bench. You're talking about guys like Protas, Strome, Fervari, all taking huge steps this year. Carberry still couldn't do anything with it. The Caps are a mess.
I've been in and out of this NHL postseason. Like, I'll go and watch large swaths of hockey and games, but I don't have a coherent viewpoint on this hockey postseason. Like, I'm going in and out of games. I'm watching games. You know, I'm watching games in overtime, games late at night, but I'm just not as tuned into it in terms of all the storylines. It's weird.
Jason, it's just one I got to tell you about from yesterday. These Vancouver Canucks, man, the cardiac Canucks, as I think I'm going to have to start calling them. This game was absolutely electric between the Canucks and Preds. I personally bet the Canucks when they were down 2-1 in the second period. They go into the third. Nashville scores again, so it's 3-1. Boom, Canucks come all the way back, win it 4-3 in overtime. I'll meet you at the window. My bad to the followers for not sending the tweet out about the live pick. It just got in so fast. But the cardiac Canucks, they may be America's team, and they're not even from here.
Summer of New York, by the way, continues tonight. Yankees, Orioles, start of a three-game set. I believe three-game set in Baltimore. Top two teams in the AL East. That should be fun. You know what's not fun? Jerseys that suck. And Major League Baseball has had jerseys that suck all year. Thank you, Nike. And apparently Major League Baseball's thrown Nike under the bus. They said, hey, they decided to innovate where innovation wasn't necessary. They're saying it'll be fixed by the latest for 2025, which means, sorry, players, you've got crappy jerseys the rest of the year.
I think it's interesting that this is all coming out now. A great follow on Twitter, Paul Lucas over at UniWatch. He has great information, was reported at the New York Times for two decades at this point on the uniforms in sports. And he did a deep dive into this around the beginning of Major League Baseball season. If you look at the Kansas City Royals uniforms, their numbers and letters are actually the same as they used to be under Majestic. That's because in the preseason, Kansas City reached out to Nike and Fanatics and said, hey, we don't want to do this change that you're doing. And Nike and Fanatics went with it. No other team across the major leagues, if my memory serves, there may be one. I can't remember completely clearly, but no other teams around Major League Baseball had this same thought to do this. Credit to the Kansas City Royals. They're not dealing with the uniform issues that everyone else is this season.
Well said, Sam Yarnell. And that's going to put a wrap on this Monday edition of Sports Wrap. Let's go, Yankees. Keep it up, baby. Summer of New York, Knicks, Rangers, Yankees, let's go.
Jason, Knicks in five, I gotta know. Everyone was chanting it last night.
I said Knicks in five,
you tell me.
I predicted Knicks in five. Go look at my Twitter. Well, now X. We'll see you all back here on Tuesday for more Sports Wrap.